Good evening and welcome to a Friday night edition of Sports Day. It might be mid-November, but a big footy news day indeed. North Melbourne has found its replacement for Rhys Shaw, Brisbane's general manager of football, David Noble, to take the reins from next season. Also, Gillon McLachlan today confirming will return to a 22-round season next year. And certainly appears as though the floating fixture and footy frenzy that we saw in 2020 are here to stay. Lee Matthews, not far away from joining us. As I say, a big day of footy, but first, Jimmy Bartel alongside myself, Shane McInnes, for a Friday night edition of Sports Day. Evening, Jim.
Evening, Shane. How are you? Friday.
It feels nice, and I tell you what, given the weather that we're going through at the moment, it's hard to believe that footy is still at the top of the agenda, but the stories just keep coming. As I mentioned, David Noble today, Gillon McLachlan front and centre with news around the fixture and also a multi-million dollar deal, $225 million to be exact, with an upgrade to Marvel Stadium. Fair to say it needs it, but now that it's in the AFL's hands, they want to make it look pretty special.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the Marvel Stadium upgrades for the fan experience, and you mentioned Gil McLachlan and the fixturing, yeah. And it's been making me think quite often, actually a little bit lately, about AFL football. We often proclaim to be a game of the people. We're Australia's game. We're the game for the fans, the tribalism, the supporters, the memberships, you name it. We get behind our teams. There's always close to a million members across Australia. We say, you know, we reach every state, we touch every point, you know, we're for top of town, we're for Struggle Street, we're for everywhere. It's the, you know, small fellas, tall fellas, girls, boys, we have women's competition. But the more and more you hear discussion around rule changes, fixturing, length of the season, time of quarters, you start to wonder, are we still the game of the people or the game for the broadcaster, for the dollar, is what I'm saying.
You're wondering if we're still the game of the fans or if the broadcaster, i.e. Seven and Fox Sports, override the fans at the moment?
Which they pay an enormous amount of money, and the game wouldn't be the game without them. So let's first and foremost tick off, say thanks to Seven and Fox and all our radio partners and everything like that, media, because it helps makes the game. It sells the game. It what's, you know, keeps players, you know, driving to the game because they get good salaries and all that. So I'm not having a go at them. But what I'm saying is every time there's a rule change or a fixturing discussion, one of the first callers we get on the line is, well, they don't ask us and we don't want night grand finals and we don't want it to be, you know, shorter quarters and we don't want this. What about the fans? What about the fans? That it is constantly what comes up.
So is it a battle of the fan at the stadium versus the fan watching at home on the couch?
I think you've hit the nail on the head where I'm getting to. So anyone out there listening, join us on the Harcourts open line, 13 13 32, for all things real estate. Speak to Harcourts. Do you think the game is going down the path of the couch experience more so than the family fan experience? But I'm even talking about, I hate 7:50 starts on Friday night. Mm. Now, that's just my personal thing. And my boys aren't old enough yet to go along to the game. But I imagine when they get to the age of 7 and 8, or, you know, at that age where you can sit still for four quarters, that 7:50 is not good because that extra half an hour means everything, or 40 minutes. It should be 7 o'clock start, because by the time you get to the game, you get the kids home, you get them in bed, it's nearly midnight if you're at, you know, nearly the 8 o'clock start.
Over to you. You're the fan. This is about your experience. Jimmy raises a good point. Are the rules that we see at the moment, be it the footy frenzy, the floating fixture?
Yeah, those are two great points.
The interchange rotations. Are we now too focused on the viewer at home as opposed to the viewer at the stadium? 13, 13, 32 is the number. We've got a round of golf for two to give away to Club Mandalay. Are we too focused on the stadium attendee, or is the game about the bloke or the family sitting at home on their couch watching on TV?
I love the footy frenzy. But did I love it because of COVID and we couldn't do anything? Mm. So Tuesday and Wednesday night. Now, I think Thursday night footy should stay. I like Thursday night football.
Sorry, and that, I'd say Thursday night football is a television product primarily. Yeah.
And everyone, let's be honest, everyone mails it in on Friday. Kids at school, people at work.
I always thought periods 1 and 2 counted on a Friday, and that was it. Once you got to recess,
exactly,
that was it.
Long lunches happen on Fridays. People clock out early to head down to the coast or the country for the tree change or the sea change. You absolutely touched on it there. The floating fixture is another part of it. Is that because it's the TV?
Next year I'll give the AFL an out here. I think part of the reason they want the floating fixture is because they simply don't know what the rules may be around COVID. What if South Australia was to close up again? What if New South Wales was to close? What if there was another outbreak in Victoria? They need that floating fixture. However, it certainly benefits the broadcaster by ensuring you have a marquee match on a Thursday night and a Friday night.
Yeah, that's where I think it probably overrides the first one. If West Coast A, say, 6-0 and just pick a big Melbourne club, Richmond are 6-0, that game's going to be either at the MCG or in Perth on a Friday night, the main time slot, or the Thursday night.
Correct.
But also, the rule changes too. More goals means more ads, which means more revenue. Which means open up the game, kick more goals. That's not, this is again our debate we had the other night. Are you after a tight, close game that could happen? Or are you after 150 points, plays 130 points?
Is the game too geared toward the viewer at home, toward the broadcaster? I understand why.
It's a difficult balance.
No, it is. But I think, given the amount of money that the broadcasters put in, without the money of Seven and Fox Sports, we don't have a game for fans to attend.
And that's why that's why I tip my cap. I'm not having to go at the broadcaster and things like that. You pay the big money. Of course, you get a seat at the table to decide where it goes.
And I think that's where fixturing and the like is important. I think changing the rules of the game to suit the broadcaster, as you mentioned, potentially for higher scoring, I think that's a bridge too far. However, I think around something like the footy frenzy, the floating fixture and the like, I think Channel 7 and Fox Footy have every right to dictate which games they get and which time slots are used. Over to you, 13-13-32. George, kick us off.
Yeah, Jimmy, you're on the money, mate. No one wants to see 17-minute quarters. No one wants to see night grand final much. And just leave it as it was, but they're not. They're going to keep it short. And the games aren't really real anymore.
Yeah, and I think, George, and that's what I said, the likes of George is normally that type of sentiment comes in on a call anytime there's a change or the night grand final, vote here, 20% say, night grand final because they're curious about it.
We haven't had this chat and a bit of a sidebar here. I was jealous that I wasn't at the Gabba for the grand final this year, given the spectacle that it was. I thought it was awesome at halftime. And if I could have been an attendee at that night grand final, I would have paid in excess of $500 for it.
I thought it was great. It was fantastic. But the uniqueness of our game, and we say it all the time, is we are a people's game and we are different. That's why it's not played anywhere else. As much as we try to play it elsewhere, we've tried to play games all around the world.
Very good evening to Shanghai. Yeah. To Echuca. G'day, Clarkie.
Hey, Jimmy. Shane, how are you?
Good, Clarkie. Go ahead.
You just got to go with the flow, mate. It's not football anymore. It's money ball. But AFL are just changing the rules when they want to these days.
But they change the rules to enhance the game, to enhance the spectacle. The AFL doesn't want eyeballs turning away. They don't want fans being turned away. Yes, it is about money, but that's also driven by the broadcasters. That's driven by the players because the AFL wants more money, so therefore the players can have more money.
But can you be both? Can you be the people's game, which makes it attractive, which draws everyone to it, and they feel ownership of it, which then you get big numbers at the ground and becomes a good product?
I know we don't want it to be money ball, but it is. That's the reality of professional sport.
If I can get the 7:50 time slot out with this discussion, I'll feel like I've had a win.
What's the latest it can start for Jimmy?
7:10.
7:10? I understand a 7:40. You've got to get home and away in.
No, not 7:40. Yeah, the last quarter feels like it's starting at 11:30 at night.
7:10. And let's go out to Dandenong. Hi, Paul. Paul, go ahead. No, Paul's gone to Ormond. Hi, Steve.
G'day, guys. How's it going?
Good.
That's good. Look, I wanted to throw my sort of 5 cents worth into this. Not that it's got a lot of weight.
You're a fan, Steve. Go ahead.
With the broadcasting and all of this kerfuffle going on with the rule changes and stuff, the biggest being the bonus that I had is the fact that they shortened the times. And in my maybe not so humble opinion, it's got nothing to do with the fatigue of the players. It's got everything to do with fitting it in with television scheduling. And, like, the reality is we've got a population of, what, 27 million people. not 280 million people like the States. And at some time, at some point in time, we've got to understand, or the AFL have to understand, that we don't have the population to effectively shaft and survive at grassroots. In America, they've got 280,000 million people to have sitters, couch potatoes, and still have a huge amount of people that want to go. And are happy with that, and that creates revenue for them. We don't have that model here, yet we're trying to apply that US or British style model to our professional sport, and it's just killing the average punter who wants to go and watch a game.
Steve,
I think it's wrong.
Appreciate the call. It's interesting what he says about the NFL. The difference with the NFL is that they actually leave Saturdays free so that college football. Yes. Can thrive. Now, the AFL obviously spreads it out across multiple time slots. I think we're close to 8 or 9 as it is at the moment. And there's no empty slot for, be it local footy, the comparison you might make to college football. But the NFL, the bulk of its games all start at 1 p.m. New York time.
But he also touches on a good point there, that they've got 280 million people, and it's the contact sport. It's their one football code. Now, they've got ice hockey as well, but they've got one football code. We've got union, league, AFL, soccer. I know in America they've got soccer, but it doesn't compete sort of with the NFL over there. And we've got so much choice for professional teams here.
The AFL to Gil McLachlan saying that it is incredibly unlikely that games will be 16-minute quarters next year. Steve Hocking also alluded to that with us earlier in the week. So 18, I think, is still a possibility. Certainly won't be 16. I think they even know that that is too short. Let's try Patrick at Malvern again. Hi, Pat.
Yeah, g'day. How are you?
Good.
Good. Look, two things. The decision to sort of about whether it's all about the armchair supporter versus the go to the game supporter, I think that was already decided when they actually split the rounds up to have Thursday night, Friday, Saturday, a second Saturday and Sunday games, as opposed to when we all used to go to the footy and catch the train and sort of meet up on Flinders Street Station and say who won. That's the first thing. I mean, sort of the whole breakup of the fixture, and it's not all happening on a Saturday afternoon. The thing that I wanted to raise, though, is the rule changes, maybe I just don't know enough about football anymore, but it dead set does my head in where, you know, you're trying to assess a situation and say, righto, what do we need to improve in the game? I don't know that many people would have had increasing the kicking distance or making sure that no one takes an extra step to the left or step to the right when they're on the mark would have been high on anyone's priority list. Why they can't just keep it really simple? You think about how frustrated we all get with the inconsistency of the umpires. Why not just do something really basic like last contact or last touch of the ball before it goes out of bounds, free kick against. No ball ups, no congestion. When it's illegal disposal, if once you've taken possession of the ball, you have to dispose of the ball in a legal way. If you don't, free kick. All of a sudden, you've just sort of decimated the number of ball ups and stoppages that you're going to have.
Patrick, it's interesting what you're saying with regard to the rules and keeping them simple. I don't think anyone wants last touch out of bounds. And the prior opportunity we spoke about the other night that it would discourage players from fighting for the footy.
Yeah, and I think, Patrick, when he was touching on those rules, he made a good point. But I think the AFL, off the back of last year's season, the COVID season, didn't want to do anything drastic. Mm. But a lot of these rules are heading towards a path of something that is drastic.
To Mentone. Hi, Rowan.
I just think, and I'm with you, Jim. Jimmy, if they change the grand final or the way they're going, everything they're doing, just leave everything as it is. And if they made the grand final a permanent night grand final, by the time it comes on at 8 o'clock or 8:30 at night, everyone's going to be that drunk, getting together, having barbecues. They'll end up hitting the record button and watching it the next day, and Foxtel and Channel 7 won't get any ratings because no one will be watching it.
Did you watch it this year, Rowan?
To tell you the truth, mate, we got smashed. As in smashed, and we recorded and watched it the next day.
Rowan, that's fair enough. You can go about it that way. A lot of people did, though, watch it live, Jim. I think it was the most watched since 2016.
But what else are you going to do in Melbourne? There was nothing to do.
No, what? I know that there was nothing to do, but the ratings were certainly there.
Yeah, the ratings were good.
I'll be very surprised if it goes back to a 2:30 time slot. I don't think it'll be night next year. I think it'll be twilight. I'll be shocked, given the ratings that Seven got out of it, that it would go back to a 2:30 slot.
No, I do have to agree with you on that one there, Shane.
We'll take a break. Other side of it, that's the first time we've agreed all week. Other side of the break, Lee Matthews is going to give his thoughts. Also, a couple more of your calls. 13 13 32. It's Sports Day for Kia and Red Energy. Friday night edition of Sports Day. Shane McGuinness alongside Jimmy Bartel, Lee Matthews in a moment. But back to the Harcourt's open line to Morty Alec. Hi, Sophia.
Hello, guys. Look, my husband is a mad Richmond supporter. And what I'd like to say is that I think the grand final at 2:30 or around that time is a brilliant time. You've got time to have your friends over at 12 o'clock. You can have something to eat, to drink, and you're still, sloshed. You can watch the game. But more importantly, because my husband was a Richmond supporter, and in 2017, we actually, Richmond won for 30 years plus, we then took all our friends out for dinner. So not only is it great for the game, but it's good for the businesses because we went out for dinner and then we went out for drinks. So that way, it's a day where a lot of businesses can prosper from that 2:30 time.
Sophia, you make some very, very fair points. And again, it's going to be a debate that continues in 2021. Gil McLachlan, by the way, non-committal at what time the grand final would start today, next year.
Now, I know we've got to get to the statue, the great Lee Matthews. Lee, David...
Good.
David Noble, absolute fantastic result. Getting the head coaching job at the Kangaroos, but a big loss for the Lions anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, he came in 4 years ago, about the same time as Chris. Well, he was actually there a month or two before Chris Fagan. He was part of the selection panel that appointed Chris Fagan. But they've been the partnership between the football manager and the senior coach is a critical partnership, I think, at a footy club gym. There's a lot of other people work there. We know that. So he'll be a big loss for the Lions, and now the Lions have got the challenge of finding a replacement. But I think we do follow the leader in the footy world and the success of Chris Fagan, who's had the massive experience in the football industry, because when they both came to the club 4 years ago, they both came from almost the same background, David Noble and Chris Fagan. You thought you could swap jobs. So we always thought his career path was going into administrative and potentially being a CEO, but obviously got the call a few weeks ago and now he's going to take on the job at North Melbourne. A very experienced football person. I think he's a terrific appointment for the Kangaroos.
Has that been the shift, you think, in coaching, Lee? You've always had to be strong on your X's and O's, as they say, but the man management now, is that a greater percentage of the coaching role?
Always has been, Jimmy, I reckon. I mean, I mean, great players make great coaches, but to actually get the best out of a collective group of people, which is what the coaching art is all about, that's about sort of, I guess, well, the modern era, Jimmy, I guess, is in the relationship building. But obviously, 40 years ago, the senior coach, the relationship was a bit hands-off, a bit like a school principal type role. So I think the running of a football department now, I saw the organisation structure at the Lions today, just coincidentally. But in the football department, the senior coach controls about 12 people. So, in fact, so now a senior coach has to be a manager. He has to not only be able to get the best out of his players, he has to be able to get the best out of his football department and the coaching part of the football department. So that's why the whole man management thing, I think, has always been critical and has become, I think, that's where experience is different, isn't it? It used to be the champion ex-player get a chance to be a senior coach. Now, I think rightly, the coaching role now is more for the mature man, probably, 40 plus, a fair few years post-playing. And I guess in David Noble, you've got a 53-year-old, so he's got a heap of he's got 20 years post-play.
Lee, do you think that, as you say, the fact that the senior coach is a manager as well, that maybe more clubs will start to look at candidates who have been general managers of football, the fact that they bring that managerial experience straight into the senior coach role?
Well, as long as you've... I mean, you go back through what Chris Fagan and David Noble, he almost got the same background. I mean, David Noble was an assistant, played, obviously, but then was an assistant coach under Terry Wallace way back. So, I mean, you're talking 20 years ago, then he was heavily involved in the Canberra, what's the under 18 team up there, whatever it's called. But and then he coached Glenelg, and then he went into football administration for a decade or so, being football manager at the Crows and football manager at the Lions. So they got the difference is they've got a coaching background at it's more not junior level but lower level than the AFL, and they've got the management experience at AFL clubs. They know how AFL clubs operate. So there's not many of them. It's not as if there's that many Chris Fagans and David Nobles sitting there out at various clubs. But it's certainly a background now the clubs are rightly valuing.
Lee, just moving on, because we don't have much time. We could speak to you for hours on footy. I know you're on a mission to get rid of all flat earthers in footy. What did you think about? They were rule changes, but they were really tweaks. If you bore down on them, yeah, they weren't really drastic. But what did you think? Were they a step in the right direction in your eyes?
Well, you know, they're really minor things. I mean, they're adjustments. Okay, the man on the mark has got to be closer to the mark rather than moving sideways. Okay, they're doing that. They're pulling the guy back 15 metres from the goal square so the guy can, if you play on out of the goal square, you can at least run up the middle a little bit. So that's it. I think they're all worthwhile initiatives. The interchange is dropping marginally. So they're minor tweaks. I was always of the view, Jimmy, that, yeah, we've got to be prepared to look to change things because the coaches have changed the game that much. I mean, if you got the long memory, Jimmy, how different the game was when you started in the early 2000s to when you finished like 15 years later. Was it like a different sport, wasn't it? Yeah, is that fair to say from your playing point of view?
Yeah, I could summarise it as tight man-on-man football to fast handballing to zones and team defence. Went through those sort of three phases, I reckon, in about 7 years.
And that the coaching, that's all about coaching tactics. And, of course, part of that is to congest the ground and crowd it up, and therefore we have a lot of players everybody's almost within a kick of the footy, most of the game. So I personally would like the game spread out a little bit more. I'm not positive how you make it happen. That's the conundrum. But I think you've got to keep tweaking bits and pieces. And as I say, I watched 40 or 50 games live this year because I was up in Queensland, and footy was up in Queensland. So I tell you what, I reckon about half the games, and for about half the game, the ball was bogged down when the team that had the ball had nowhere to do anything attacking with it except maintain possession. Kick it sideways, just maintain possession because the opposition, the zonal defence was just so good. Now, that's what modern coaching has introduced to the game over a period of time. Now, how do you loosen it up so the attacking flow can become more predominant? I mean, that's what I'd like to see happen in the game. And there's a lot of potential theories on what you might do to assist that process, Jimmy. But I'm for trying to find the solution.
Lee, the nuclear solution seems to be starting positions. It'll be trialled in the second tier competition up and down the East Coast next year. Would you be supportive if it was to make its way into the AFL come 2022, if it's deemed to have worked in the VFL?
Well, potentially. I mean, I actually was at a couple of the trials a couple of years ago when just match practice at training, the AFL asked clubs to be part of this kind of experiment. The thing is, what has to happen, of course, when it's a boundary throw in and a kick in, right? So you've got to hold the ball long enough to allow the players to get, you know, back to their base at the areas where they're supposed to be. If you talk about the goal square, I mean, to run a pair of players back to the goal square. Now, we're all hoping you might end up having the old style full forward who might encourage, but you know, the practicalities of these things are really difficult. We spend most of our discussion time, I suspect, Jimmy, don't we, when we're in the AW commentary box talking about, well, what can you do to decongest the game? And we've all got thoughts of things that might assist that process, but I guess you've got to experiment with them, and that's exactly what the AFL are doing with the VFL competition.
Hey, Lee, always love your insights. Can you get that premier of yours to open the border? We're ready to come up for a holiday.
surely at the end of the month, I'm ready to fly down and visit my daughter and my grandkids in Melbourne. I'm ready. End of the month, surely.
I reckon it's a fair swap. You can visit your family and Victorians can go up for a nice little holiday. Lee, take care. Always wonderful to chat.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
Lee Matthews, part of the 3AW football team, always gives a great insight. It is interesting. A lot of his contemporaries, Jim, are anti the changing of the game. But Lee Matthews, having coached right up until the mid-2000s, still very supportive. If we need rule changes, so be it.
Yeah, and I've heard Lee speak about this a lot. And he's a genius at just talking sense. And one big thing is, whatever rules we've got, he just wants them interpreted properly.
And I think that's fair to say that most fans do.
Yeah.
If you can get the correct interpretation, at least a consistent interpretation, then everyone's happy. Lee Matthews joining us for Giant Bicycles. We're still riding with you. More sports day to come for Kia and Red Energy right after this. Footy's dominated the conversation so far on Sports Day this evening. Football of another kind in the world of A-League soccer. This one's an interesting one, Jim. Western United aiming to play 6 matches at Amy Park in the upcoming A-League season, but Victory and City are trying to block that from happening. Now, Western United played a lot of its games down at GMHBA Stadium last year. It's creating a bit of a standoff ahead of the A-League fixture release. I don't know why on earth Western United would want to compete with Victory and City in Melbourne proper when they can try and dominate that Western front with Cadinia Park and then obviously that stadium they're building out at Tarnate.
Yeah, well, I thought that was going to be the arrangement. Yeah. They were going to be everything west of the West Gate.
Correct.
And own that. And I get maybe one or two games. You bring your big blockbusters because you want to do the inner west as well. But yeah, 6, I think, is a few too many.
I think to own that Geelong, you know, corridor.
It's a massive soccer or football.
Correct.
Area down that way.
I find that really odd. And in the NFL, Thursday night footy, the Seattle Seahawks defeated the Arizona Cardinals 28-21. Both Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray throwing 2 touchdowns. I know you're a big NFL junkie, Jim. Let's get to our Friday predictions or our Friday reviews. Firstly, the Furphy Friday, unbelievable moment of the week for Furphy Crisp Lager.
Well, if you get labelled the worst team ever to run out in 40 years and you triumph against the New South Wales Blues, you know, who had won the last 2 series, it has to be the Queensland winning Origin side led by Melbourne Storm's own Cam Munster.
So, Furphy Friday, unbelievable moment, Queensland winning the Origin. What about our Bowls Australia legendary moment? Local legends are wanted. Search Bowls clubs near me via the Google machine.
Well, I mentioned Melbourne Storm, and that's normally associated with Cam Smith, but it's the other Cam Smith who actually hit 4 rounds in the 60s at the Masters to finish runner-up. Incredible effort. First time in history.
Amazing. And you still don't win.
Think of all the greats. Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus, you name it. Arnold Palmer, yada, yada, on and on. No one's done it apart from him. And he couldn't get the win. But let's just applaud. He's got the runner-up.
He should have gotten a jacket of some sort nonetheless. Local legends wanted. The Bowls Green is just up the road. Search Bowls clubs near me. Sports day for Tyre Power. Save on selected Falcon, passenger and four-wheel drive tyres. This is Sports Day. Welcome back to Sports Day. Shane McGuinness and Jimmy Bartel with you here for Macca's. Macca's 30 Days, 30 Deals is back. It's time to download the My Macca's app. Jim, time to talk a little bit of greyhounds because the Melbourne Cup, not too far away. Melbourne Cup heats tonight out at Sandown Park to talk all things greyhounds. We're joined by Molly Haynes. Molly, good evening to you.
Good evening. It's going to be, like you said, a massive night of greyhound racing at Sandown Park tonight. I'm here. I'm on course. I'm lucky enough to be here thanks to my media commitment, and I just can't wait.
What are we looking forward to in the heats of the Melbourne Cup tonight?
Look, the heats of the Melbourne Cup, we've got some amazing stories, but there's 3 greyhounds I need to point out. Now, our favourite, and he has been for a while, Shimmershine. He's in race number 3, box 3. He's a freak of an animal. He won his first group race only a couple of weeks ago, so he could be, I suppose, picking up his second group one within a month, which is a huge effort. Then there's a greyhound who is called Simon Told Helen, who's owned by a bunch of doctors down in the Geelong region. He's known as the Nose because he's got a nice big rose nose that you can see on TV. He is in race 7, box number 4. And then Tommy Shelby, he's a name on everyone's lips. He's racing for Movember this month, so 5% of his prize money will go towards Movember. So if he wins the Melbourne Cup, that's $435,000. you guys can do the maths, 5% of that, because my maths isn't that great.
It's fantastic, Molly. Jimmy Bartel here. A couple of those favourites you mentioned coming out of boxes that are normally difficult to win. So there must be some serious talents to still be a chance coming out of the three and the four box.
Absolutely. Look, Simon told Helen he's just got this impeccable early pace. Once he hits the ground, it's like it's on fire. He just absolutely springboards away, and that's just what is setting him apart from all of the other greyhounds going around at the moment. And look, Shimmer Shine, like you mentioned, he does have box number three. He can be a little bit hit or miss out of the boxes, but he's just a hard chaser. And I think, you know, that is just such a, I suppose, a good ability to have when it comes to greyhound racing, especially at the elite level like it is tonight.
Well, what's coming up on Sunday's Thrill of the Chase? We've got the box draw for the Melbourne Cup. Any other features they're going to show?
Absolutely. Look, we've got a tearjerker of a story, but in a good way. We went down to Geelong. I feel like I've said that a couple of times, but we went down to Geelong to shoot a feature story about a man by the name of Matthew Fields and his adopted greyhound, Apache. It is just absolutely amazing to see just how much greyhounds as pets can change people's lives as well. So a real tearjerker there. And I've also got young Jess Hopkins on Molly's Lounge for my favourite segment, of course. And she's bringing her greyhound in, Eyecatcher. So it should be a great show.
Molly, appreciate your time. Don't miss Thrill of the Chase, the latest greyhound news and feel-good stories this Sunday, 10 a.m. on 7.2. Thanks for your time, Molly.
Thanks very much, guys.
Molly Haynes joining us on Sports Day. Before the break, Jim, let's find a win-win for Betfair. Betfair, 0% commission this Friday. Melbourne Cup heats. Gamble responsibly. Call 1-800-858-858.
Well, probably the news, the Marvel Stadium upgrades. Win-win for the AFL. Footy fans, entertainment goers, local food and bev. It's going to be a really great precinct. It
brings Docklands to life.
Hope so.
Definitely hope so. Sports Day for Red Energy. Born and bred in Melbourne. That's Red Energy and Kia. Just about there for the week of Sports Day, but this spring, Ladbrokes is changing the way you multi. Always gamble responsibly. You can get them on 1-800-858-858. Tommy Hackett joins us from Ladbrokes. Tommy, good evening to you.
Good evening, boys.
Let's start with the Railway Stakes, Race 8 over at Ascot tomorrow.
Yeah, Group 1 Racing is back in Perth tomorrow. It's a really interesting race this year. Inspirational Girl is the favourite with William Pike in the saddle. It's won four of its past five race starts, and William Pike went into quarantine so he could ride this horse in the Railway Stakes and missed the ride on Arcadia Queen, who went on to win the McKinnon Stakes. So he obviously thinks he's on a really good chance here. Too Close to Sun's been the market mover, the Warrnambool Cup winner. It opened $6.50, been backed into $5. I think the horse to beat, though, at a bit of value is Red Can Man. It's been $7.50 out to $9. Has been racing well in similar races to this. I think it's ready to peak in the Railway Stakes. So quite keen on Red Can Man at the $9 mark.
$500,000 on offer for the winner of the Ballarat Cup. Who will start favourite in that big race?
It's a really good addition to the Ballarat Cup. It's probably the strongest addition I can remember. It's a really good betting race as well. We've got equal favourites, Junipal and A Fair to Remember, both last start winners. They're both there at $5.50. Be good money for Paradidome in the saddle. It's been backed into $9. Kingsville Dream, he's a Group 1 winner. He's the class horse in this field. He's currently $11. But another race where I think there's a bit of value to be found with Harlem at $13, the two-time Australian Cup winner. Hasn't won for a while, but he's been racing really well this preparation. Finished fifth in the McKinnon Stakes, and this is a genuine drop in quality. So I think Harlem could run well each way. I think it's a really good each way bet. $13 to win, $4 to place.
We've just had the draft in the NBA and trade and free agency and players moving everywhere. Has there been a big market mover for the NBA championships, or is it still the Lakers to beat?
Lakers are still the team to beat, but there's definitely been a lot of movement in the market. The Lakers are the $4.25 favourites. The Milwaukee Bucks have made some big moves during the trade period. They're now in the $6 on the second line of betting. The other shortness have been the Brooklyn Nets. Well, James Harden has been linked with a trade to the Brooklyn Nets. If he did go, they'd be really tough to beat. They're there at $6.50. The Clippers, who were thereabouts last year, they're $7. Then you've got a bit of a gap to the likes of the Celtics at $15 and the Heat at $17. But I think the Bucks and the Nets are the teams to watch over the next week. So I think that price will shorten.
So what's the Tommy special for the weekend? What have you been brewing up?
Well, it's an interesting weekend for especially. There's a lot of quality races, but I'm going to go to Kembla Grange for the $1 million race, the Gong. I really like Rock there at $7. The horse has been racing really well this preparation. He ran the fastest closing sectionals in Epsom Handicap, finished third in the Kennedy Cantala on Victoria Derby Day. Looks really well placed in this race, the Gong. I think at $7, he's a great bet. He'll settle in the second half of the field, but he'll be flying home late.
Tommy, beautifully done. Tommy Hacker joining us from Ladbrokes. They're changing the way you multi, giving you more chances to win. Remember to gamble responsibly. Call 1-800-858-858. We're just about done for the week. Of course, Sports Day, all with thanks to Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That's Red Energy. And Kia, Jimmy, the final word to you, the appointment of David Noble to coach North Melbourne as of next year.
Fantastic appointment. Great football man, has years and years of experience. He'll help bring that club together and hopefully send the Kangaroos in the right direction.
I mentioned it to Lee and you as well. Do you think this is a model that a lot of teams will look at, given the success we saw at Chris Fagan? If, and hopefully they do, North Melbourne gets success with David Noble, is it something that other teams will look at in the future?
They'll certainly look at it, but it's the right Melbourne for the Kangaroos right now.
Absolutely. Hey, Jim, it's been a pleasure working with you this week. I know you're going to be doing plenty of Sports Day over the summer, so look forward to hearing you then. I'll be back on Monday with Sam McClure. Hope you can join us from 6. Have a great weekend. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you Monday. Second hour of Sports Day on a Friday night. Great to have your company. Shane McGuinness and Jimmy Bartel in the chair. Sports Day, of course, for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. And what's the fire danger rating in your district? Check daily. Go to emergency.vic.gov.au. Well, Jim, we've gone through 8 clubs already as we continue our trade review. 2 tonight, and Sam McClure and I will continue it next week. And it just works out nicely that tonight, alphabetically, Greater Western Sydney falls on your evening, because obviously you have a great insight there as a board member with the Giants. 2 considerable names in, Jesse Hogan and Braden Pruce, but a handful of names out as well. None bigger, obviously, than Jeremy Cameron.
Yeah, spot on. I had the Cats the other night as well, so I've fallen right into the sweet spot for this. Look, the pundits down here said, oh, mass exodus, there's got to be a cultural problem. But if you go through them in isolation, Zach Williams, they couldn't afford to pay him what he wanted. You know, the salary cap is an issue, as we found with Collingwood. If you keep overpaying, there's going to be a spill of players. Zach Williams, quite rightly, he went for his big contract. Carlton offered him something that the Giants couldn't match. So you had to let that one go. Jai Caldwell, he was stuck in the queue for midfielders. Jeremy Cameron, as we know and spoken about. Zach Langdon, again, stuck in the queue. And Aiden Corr moving back for family reasons. Wants to start a new family around his partner's family down here in Melbourne. So when you break him down in isolation like that, it's not a cultural problem.
And you still have the nucleus of what is a pretty impressive team when you look at Cornelio, Kelly, Green,
Taranto, Haynes, Whitfield. Oh, yeah, they keep going on, obviously. Young Green from last year, Lockie Ash down at half back. And then you bring in some players, Braden Pruce. The Giants forever and a day have been looking for a ruckman. Mm-hmm. Now, Big Mummy's been absolutely fantastic. Shane Mumford off a rookie list, but you can't keep going back to him. And he knows that as well, because he's getting in his senior years of AFL football. You get Braden Pruce, who served 2 good apprenticeships under Todd Goldstein and Max Gawn, in the prime for his ruckman years, you know, mid-20s. So he comes in, the ruckman that the Giants have been seeking. They tried with Sam Jacobs. Didn't work, that's okay. But the Jesse Hogan one, it's a contract friendly for the Giants. A guy who just wants to get out of the footy bubbles. We know he's top end talent. So it's a relatively cheap shot at the stumps, if you want to borrow the cricket term. And then when the draft period, I think they did as well as they could for the players going out. You got 5 picks inside the top 30.
And 3 inside the top 15 as well. Before we look at what the Giants might fire at in the draft, just on Braden Pruce, does he automatically come in as that number one ruckman as opposed to a backup for Shane Mumford? Is this a phasing out of Shane Mumford and as opposed to being consistently reliant on him?
Well, probably not consistently reliant on him. There's a couple of young ruckmen there at the Giants, but they've had injury issues, so we haven't actually been able to have a look at him in Briggs being one of them. So you want him to come in and think he's the number one ruckman and earn it, but Shane Mumford's going to make him earn it. And that's the great thing of what Shane Mumford does, a great clubman. Just touching on the other 2 players that went out, Jai Caldwell and Jackson Hatley. Hatley was just pure opportunities. We would keep him. He's a great citizen, things like that. But when we spoke about that midfield, he's always going to be behind it, much how we spoke about Lachlan Fogarty from the Cats. And Jai Caldwell needed promises. He wanted to be promised a starting position. Essendon were able to do that. And again, what Essendon offered him, we couldn't offer them in that contract terms for what will be a 3rd-year player.
So what do you look at then, Jim, in terms of getting in to the Giants? It is a star-studded midfield, probably didn't operate as desired this year. Do you look to add to that tank? Do you look at someone that can maybe replace Jeremy Cameron long-term?
You look at the best available there at 10, 13 and 15, but obviously, as you said, you're probably looking at key defenders more than key attacking because you've still got Himmelberg, Finlayson, Riccardi showed a lot. I think everyone was impressed with Riccardi last
year. It was his debut season, yeah.
And Jesse Hogan. So four key forwards. You're still probably looking for a key forward if he's there, but probably a key defender, you know, maybe to eventually fill Phil Davis's shoes. He's got a couple more years. Haynes, but they're closer to the 30 than the forward group are to 30, if that makes sense. So, and you're probably looking at another midfield type in around those picks. So having so many, you can pick best players, but you can pick best players for need as well.
What was the fallout from this year in terms of not playing finals after a grand final appearance the year before? Do you think that will fire up the team going into 2021, that disappointing 2020?
You hope so, don't you? You hope it sharpens them up, and I think a lot of them would sit there and say it's a missed opportunity because they certainly had the talent, and we know they've got the talent there, but talent only gets you so far, and we've seen premiership sides. Richmond, I know it's an easy one to pick, but you look at their players that they've got off rookie lists or late draft picks, that doesn't matter that you're a first-round draft pick. Richmond's littered with them. Marlon Pickett, we've got a book in the room here. He's come from a mid-season draft from as far back as you can come to get yourself drafted. He's a two-time premiership player, Castagna, Lambert, you know, from out of the VFL. So I think it dawned upon them, talent will only take you so far, but you need to do, the, as they say in America, the grind.
So that's the Giants. Let's move on to Hawthorn, who probably weren't as prolific in the trade period as they have been in the past. Kyle Hartigan and Tom Phillips come in from Adelaide and Collingwood, respectively. The big name out is Isaac Smith. They certainly lose a lot of experience through Smith, who was probably chasing that elusive fourth premiership with Geelong. They've also got a pick inside the top 10 in pick 4. I've got to admit, I'm a huge Tom Phillips fan. I know all the talk out of Collingwood was Jaden Stevenson and Adam Treloar, but Tom Phillips at his best is an incredibly talented player.
Yeah, two seasons ago, I think three quarters of the way through, he was in the All-Australian squad, wasn't he? I think he was averaging about 25 touches, and he was kicking a goal a game. And then he just sort of tapered off as the season went. Fantastic. But he was surplus to Collingwood's needs, and as we mentioned, they had to shed salary. So they saw that, a lot of mid-half forward types. But when you look at the two wins, they replace two of the outs that they had. Isaac Smith is Tom Phillips is a swap, and even if you look at the pick they got for Smith was 46, but then they used pick 65 to get Phillips. That's smart business. And then Kyle Hartigan comes in and replaces Frawley. So they've just gone like for like, and they've had this thing called a first-round draft pick, which I don't think...
It's been a while since Hawthorn's had one of them.
The Hawthorn recruiters would have been nervous during trade week, going, oh, there's another one going out, but it's good. 4-24, they'll pick up some pretty handy players. And we know under Alistair Clarkson, the Hawks don't ever stand still. They look to reinvent themselves consistently.
Yeah, they're not a team that's going to just go, oh, a couple of places on the ladder, we'll be fine. You know, we're just rebuilding. They want to get back in the finals calculation as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and probably the big thing for them is James Sicily doing his ACL late. He's a star of the competition. He's a beautiful kick of the footy, but what that does is provide opportunity. What it'll do is probably fast-track Will Day, who's a super young talent, who almost... reminds me of Andrew Mackey, again from South Australia. Looks built the same. But what it'll do is, Sicily was the quarterback. Mm. The guy who they try and get the footy into their hands. Will Day will probably fill the James Sicily role. So, you know, in a year, 18 months' time, when you've got Sicily and Day across halfback, that's pretty dangerous.
Kyle Hartigan coming across from Adelaide, about getting more opportunities as well at Hawthorn. Does he ideally replace that James Frawley role, as you alluded to?
Yeah, certainly does, because Frawley goes out, Stratton goes out, Sicily obviously misses a year. So they've got some holes in defence. He's super competitive, big guy, pretty powerful. So he'll just plug straight in and play straight away for the Hawks.
It's been great getting your insights this week, Jim. We will continue our look through the trade period of each of the 18 AFL clubs when Sam McLuett joins me again next week. Stay safe, self-isolate, and if drinking, please drink wise. And remember, being prepared for fire could save your life. Download the Vic Emergency app at emergency.vic.gov.au. More sports day to come as we look back on the week that was. Welcome back to Sports Day, all with thanks to Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Well, earlier in the week, we had the opportunity to catch up with the AFL Football Operations Manager, Stephen Hocking. A few changes on the cards for season 2021, including a rotation, a drop in interchange rotations for next year. It'll go from 90 to 75. What impact will that have on the game? And what does the AFL really want the game to look like? Our chat with Stephen Hocking from earlier in the week.
Thanks, Shane, and hi, Jim.
Fair to say there would have been a lot to debrief out of season 2020. How did today's meeting go?
Yeah, look, it was excellent, Shane. It was really good to catch up. Everyone's been incredibly busy this year, and we really appreciate all of the comp committee members' involvement today, finding the time. I think a lot of people have come out of the season and have been looking forward to just catching their breath. So to have them available to work through what's ahead of us was really important. So, yeah, we acknowledge that and thank them.
Hock, Jimmy here. Thanks for joining us. The competition committee you just touched on there, with all due respect to them, the coaches, how much weight do you put on their comments? Because their job is to pull whatever you put in place apart.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. We've got we're fortunate enough to have Chris Fagan as part of it, Jim, and we've also got Patrick Dangerfield and Steve Cornelio as well. We've got Craig Bozzo, Chris Davies as part of it as well. We did have Brad Scott. So there's good representation from what you're talking about. And certainly Chris Fagan was testing all of that with us today. So their job is definitely to do that. We understand that. Our role is to make sure we put a bit more time and space back into the game, and you know what we've announced today, we feel is incremental change. It's not new rules. It's just being a bit tighter on certain interpretations. So yeah, they will pull it apart though, Jim. They'll spend most of summer doing that.
How much did 2020 affect the decision-making going into it? So we go back 7 months before really COVID took hold and the season turned on its head. Were these rules looking likely, or these been affected by 2020?
Yeah, it's a great question, Jim. And the reason why it is because I actually found 2020 quite advantageous as far as our decision making goes. We were able to, through that footy frenzy, just see so much football. I think one of the challenging things for most people in a normal season is how do you get through 9 games in a weekend? We're watching multiple games day by day right across a 3 or 4 week period. So we're able to really analyse it and get in underneath it. And what we have seen over the last 5 years is just that that pressure factor increasing within the game. And so part of what we've done and the work that we've done, we saw that go to another level this year because the quarters were reduced quite clearly. Rotations weren't touched as well. And we just saw most of that influence in the game in a defensive way. And so these changes that we've announced are related to just getting a bit more balance between attack and defence. So I found 2020 to be highly valuable.
Before I let Shane dig into some of the actual rules with you, you touched on the fixturing. The length of the season, firstly, is it back to 22 games? And the footy frenzy you mentioned, will we have another Festivus of football?
Well, look, I think most people liked it, Jim, certainly feedback's been really strong from all the fans out there, and certainly across the clubs and players as well. So it's something that we've got our eye on and something we're considering. As far as the fixture goes, we've got a bit of work ahead of us yet before we land that, and we'll just continue to work through with all the key stakeholders, broadcasters, and certainly clubs, but we should sort of have a bit more of an idea in the coming weeks.
Steve Hocking is the AFL Footy Operations Boss joining us on Sports Day. Probably the biggest rule change, Hock, is the interchange rotations down from 90 to 75. What kind of impact do you expect that to have on the game? We've heard elder statesmen of the game believing that rotations should be slashed down to 40 or less. We go from 90 to 75. What impact do you expect?
Yeah, so Shane, again, another good question. I think from our point of view, you know, what we've considered in this is incremental change. We'll stay open to what 22 looks like and beyond that as well. Our view is that you know, we need to continue to look after the health and safety of the players, and so 15 we believe allows the competition and certainly club sports science people who have done an unbelievable job to get the game through 2020 and players as well on top of that. It gives them a chance to just adapt and adapt over time rather than being a massive chunk in one hit. You know, we are mindful that the game is really competitive. You know, the competition has never been closer than what it currently is, and you do need to be careful that you don't open it up too far and all of a sudden, you know, you've got one side of game. So we've certainly been mindful of that. As far as the impact on it, again, just back to the you know, balance between defence and attack, you know, players are going to have to think about. I know, you know, Jim was notorious for this. He would work out which stoppages he was going to and you know, where what contested situations he would get to, and then where would he bank a bit of energy. And so, you know, that's going to be a bit of strategy that players and clubs are going to have to work through from here, and that's what it does.
He's a smart boy, Jimmy Bartel. That's why we have him on Sports Day, Hock.
Yeah, no, he would have been all over this and going, right, opportunity for me.
Hey, a word that scares some traditionalists in footy who always say, leave the game alone. It, you know, I want it like how it used to be in the 60s and 70s and 80s. Zones, it's sort of going to come into the second-tier competition, sort of yet to be formally named. The thinking behind that, is it just trialling in the second-tier competition? What was the thinking around, I think, is it three players from each have got to go back into forward 50 or defensive 50?
Yeah, that's right, Jim. And so, look, the first part to acknowledge is we're really excited about the 22-team competition, the VFL East Coast competition. It's a talent pathway development competition, and we're excited about that. All of the second tier and community levels, you know, how they develop is super important for us. It's what supports the elite competition. So that's the first part to acknowledge. We felt that this is too big a step to be putting it into the AFL at this point in time, and we need to just do more study and more understanding of it. And so one of the things that we'll do, Jim, is we'll actually have a university that we'll partner with and do a PhD study on this and track it right through the year and watch it closely as to what difference it makes to that comp around less congestion around contested situations and migration of players up the field. So the way it'll work is that, as you've highlighted, there'll be three pairs. One of those pairs will also be inside the goal square at all boundary throw-ins and also kick-ins. And, yeah, we just think that over time, hopefully what we see is we see players' behaviour change. You know, watching games, as I do regularly, and you guys do, and many others, you just see players just naturally now migrate. So these are some tools, interpretation that will hopefully just stretch the ground a bit more and actually have players in areas. And then clubs will then have to work out how they then layer up from that contest back to those three pairs that are back in the forward 50.
The conspiracy theorist, Steve, might suggest that you're trying to warm up those in the AFL to seeing more starting positions come 2022. Is it something that's on the horizon in the AFL, or is it just purely it's going into the second tier competition? We need to assess, we need more data on it before we can even consider putting it into the AFL in 2022.
Yeah, look, it's certainly something we are considering for the future. Definitely, Shane, I'm more than happy to acknowledge that. You know, to Jim's earlier point about you know, the traditionalists, it is a shift from that. Mm. But you know, the traditionalists really want the game to be opened up. Everyone's you know, talking about you know, it's become quite defensive. There's a lot of numbers around the ball, so. You know, whatever we can do to free up the Sharon is that's part of my role. It's part of the game analysis team, and so hence we'll do it at the second tier level and monitor it, and you know, make sure that if it does end up in the AFL, that it's actually hardened, right decision making is around it, how do you officiate it, all those things are really important to iron out.
You only had to listen to Talkback Radio this year, so much of the conversation about the look of the game. Where the AFL sits, is it about easing congestion? Is it about free-flowing? Or is it about high scoring and seeing more goals kicked? Do we want close games or do we want high scoring games? What's the view inside AFL HQ?
I think the most important thing is what the fans want, Shane. It's not necessarily what the AFL HQ wants. It's what the fans want, and you know what we're hearing is a greater balance between attack and defence, and more moments like Dustin Martin in the grand final, as well as players like Liam Ryan and many others. Charlie Cameron, we want those players having more time and space in the game so that they can show their wares and display that more often. And so my insight is that's what the fans want to see. And certainly close games is really important because it keeps everybody engaged, definitely. Keeps people on the edge of their seat. We want random moments. We want spectacular moments. We want instinctive moments. So I think that's the greatest part of our game, and I'm more than happy for the traditionalists to challenge me on that. Certainly welcome the passion that comes with all of that, but that's my role as a custodian within this role that I currently fill is to find more of those opportunities for those moments in the game.
Just finally, Steve, do you think it's a balance between attack and defence, or that it is more about attack, given that it does seem to be the fans want scoring, they want goals to be kicked, they want to get out of their chairs, they want to cheer those moments. Do you think, as important as defence is and an aspect of our game, that there is a more favourable look at the attacking and forward line aspect of footy?
I definitely think, Shane, it's part of what people want to see, but as I said, as soon as you swing too far one way, the pendulum goes heavily towards attack. I'm not sure that everybody wants that. It's quite clear that the closeness of the competition, which is what we saw in 2020, an unbelievable year, and went right down to an excellent grand final. It's the arm wrestle piece, definitely. It really close competitive teams that on any given day, the fan is showing up and not sure who's going to win. I think we all welcome that, but we certainly want to see a bit more attack and as I've said, time and space, because off the back of that, we will see more moments from those great players.
Last one, I might be stepping into Travis Auld territory here, but do you know when we're getting a fixture for next year and what it might look like?
It's certainly Travis's area, and what an incredible job he's done through 2020. Look, if we cast our eye back over 2020, I think we're really well placed as far as when that will land and what it will look like. So heap of confidence that the right people will make the right decisions there, and that'll be more like December before any of that starts to land, and what it looks like, as I say, is in good hands. They'll work through it with all the key stakeholders.
Nah, he's done a good job, but so too have you. You're always very generous with your time and answering the questions. Appreciate it. If we don't talk to you again before the end of the year, have a lovely Christmas. Certainly the team at AFL HQ have deserved it. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Shane. Thanks, Jim. Good luck to both of you.
Steve Hocking there, all with thanks to Ozmade. Shop for authentic Aussie products. Choose Australian made. For Wilson Homes, this is Sports Day Chat with one of their friendly staff today about personalising a home design to suit your individual lifestyle. This is Sports Day, with thanks to Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Well, the Big Bash isn't too far away from resuming, but there are changes going into BBL 10. This year, it's going to be full of power surges, bash boosts, and X Factors. So, is the Big Bash becoming gimmicky? We caught up with Trent Woodhill, who is a consultant with Cricket Australia, also the coach of the Melbourne Stars in the WBBL. He explained some of the new rule changes and why they're there. Whether you agree or not, well, that's up to you. Here's our chat with Trent Woodhill. What was the impetus to making a few rule changes coming into this new season?
For me personally, it's just I love innovation and I love discussing innovation. I like to see how you can improve different sports and different competitions. And you know, for others, it was a combination of a refresh for BBL 10, but also to provide some extra excitement within matches, not just at the start and at the end.
So Trent, Jimmy Bartel here. Thanks for joining us. Was that the brief from powers above that we need to change?
It was to source people who wanted to discuss the BBL and to see where we're at, and change was mooted. So it was to get as much information from different stakeholders, players, coaches, fans, broadcasters. So it was a combination of everybody, and then to see what we could come up with.
I mean this in a respectful way, but how did you find the balance of making change without it being sounding like Mickey Mouse rule changes?
Yep. Yeah. Well, I mean, my background's high performance. You know, whether it's watching cricket or watching other sports, I love that competition between athlete and athlete, and I love it between coach and coach. And I think these rules aren't gimmicky. I think they offer an opportunity for leadership and strategy without taking away from the actual game itself.
So the power surge is an additional power play that the batting team gets to implement?
Well, they have four up front, so normally a power play is six overs.
Yep.
With the power surge, they'll have the first four overs will be mandatory, and then they'll have an opportunity to take two overs of the batter's choice in succession from 10 to 20 overs.
Okay, so instead of the six being run concurrently, it's now split up. The bash boost is a fascinating one. It's kind of a game within a game, a bonus point after the 10 over mark.
Yep, that's right. The team batting first total after 10 will be recorded. And then the team batting second will have effectively two chases. There's the chase after 10 to get a point, and there's the chase after obviously 20 or whenever they can finish that off to get their maximum points. Some teams will take four from it, some will get three and a one, but it just offers something in the middle of the game for the batting team to chase.
The X factor is the interesting one for me, where there's the potential to sub in a player in the first innings. You can sub in a batsman that is, and sub out a batsman who hasn't faced a ball, or you can sub in a bowler and replace a bowler that's only bowl one over. My question then, Trent, is it unfair to the team bowling second that they don't have the ability to swap out a bowler?
It's interesting how both journalists, players, coaches alike ask a question like that, and that they'll ask it from a different viewpoint.
Yeah.
So others are seeing this as an advantage batting first, others are seeing it as an advantage batting second. It just gives you an opportunity to maybe if you've lost the toss to readdress that or if you feel you're a bit out of the game, you need a different tactic to get into it. That could be as much as changing a quick for a spinner, or it could mean losing a batter to add another bowler, or adding another batter if you feel like maybe three or four down, you need more runs to get to a target that you can defend.
Further to that point, Trent, do you feel like then there's going to be greater onuses on the coach match day then?
I think there'd be greater responsibility rather than onus. I think obviously in AFL, NRL, particularly NRL, they might run the game from the sideline. The captain is still in charge in cricket, and that's the beauty of it. But what it will mean is that if a coach sees something or has something, they have an opportunity to talk to their skipper, especially after that 10 overs, and make a change if they need it. Or, you know, or they might see something that the captain's not seeing and they can implement a change. So it'll just bring their decision-making and questioning that decision-making to the forefront, whether that's pre or post-match.
Now, you mightn't be able to reveal this as an answer, but that great word in sport, stakeholders. Which of the stakeholders, and you mentioned a few of them earlier, was the biggest pusher for these rule changes? Was it TV, Channel 7 and Foxtel? Was it the actual players, or you know, when you were canvassing fans, they wanted something new?
I think everybody likes a refresh, but I think from my point of view, my only remit that it was is to come up with something that's going to continue to be high performance. We're going to have more runs scored at different opportunities of the game. It's still a battle, and it's still fun. The BBL is fun. And you know, in terms of stakeholders, everyone's a stakeholder because you want as much support as possible. Might sound like a politician's answer, but in my case, Seven, Fox, players, ACA, coaches, everyone's been supportive and everyone was interested. And that's important. Everyone wanted to have a discussion about it. And And there'll be ones on, you know, who don't like change and want things to stay the same because they enjoy the product, and there'll be others who will be really grateful for these changes. And all I ask is that your people get behind it, enjoy it, and continue to let summer be taken over by the BBL.
Would you say then it'd give it a point of difference because there's BBL or 2020 competitions, even 100 ball competitions, 10 over.
Yep.
Does this actually
which
give
is a good one too.
Yeah, which you're a part of as well. Does this give it actually a point of difference because there's so many of them going on around the world now?
Yeah, and this is purely my opinion. I've been involved with maybe 350 games, and you probably know from your career in Geelong, you know football inside out, and you know areas where it can be improved. And I just know personally, sitting on the sidelines for T20 matches, there's definite spikes in games, and there's lulls, and then you know, certain people say, well, you know, it's a short game. Where's the lull? But talking to players, you know, about that, and I'm a big fan of this. Of the power surge, having that ability for a young player to take on a good death bowler with only two out, that's a good matchup, and that's going to provide an interest and provide a boost. And I like that different tournaments around the world have their own little take on how it's played. And the players, it's still a contest between bat and ball with the fielding side. So players adapt really quickly. But also, you know, the smart ones develop a strategy to cope better than maybe some who don't give it much airtime.
Trent, most fans, when it comes to what they want out of the Big Bash, it seems they want big names, maybe a shorter season. Do you risk confusing basic fans adding in these new rules? I mean, at its essence, cricket's a pretty simple game. Do you risk making it overly complicated?
I don't think so. I think these are pretty straightforward changes. I think it's still that competition. And my seven-year-old son is excited by the colour and by that contest. He loves it when Glenn Maxwell's swinging his bat or Adam Zampa is bowling the ball. So that hasn't changed. So Adam Zampa's still going to bowl four overs predominantly. Glenn Maxwell's still going to, you know, hopefully bat for 40 balls in each match. And all you'll see that's different is that when there's a contest, well, not so much between Adam and Glenn, but you know, Adam will have to deal with the threat of having only two players out of his bowling in that second phase of the power surge. For one over at least, and that's a challenge. And I know people like Glenn and Adam are excited by it, and they're excited by the strategy behind it as well.
Where do changes become too much in a sport like cricket? I look at the X factor rule, and I'm used to having my starting 11, and that's finalised. If we're bringing in the X factor and a super sub, what's to say we don't bring in one hand, one bounce, for instance? Where's the line that we cross to take away the purity of cricket?
Well, I think I've been asked that question with 100 a lot. And you look at the rules, the purity of the rules and the contest. So my passion, as I mentioned at the start, is high performance. I love that battle between athletes. As long as that battle between athletes exists and it's a fair contest, then I don't think that the rules will take away from that at all. You know, that's part of my remit. You know, coaching the WBBL girls at the moment, you know, there's now a 10-over break in this game, and it hasn't hampered it. It's actually enhanced the contest and gives the players a chance to reset. So if the girls have adapted really well to that, and I think the players and the coaches will adapt really well. And once you're in that contest and the hairs in the back of your neck start to prick up about what you're going to face or what you've got to do with the bat, that's the contest in itself. And there's just a couple of nuances around that which are going to allow some added excitement and continued excitement all the way through the contest.
Trent, you're a creative type. Have you worked out a way to move your games to Marvel Stadium so you don't get washed out? It's the only way you seem not to get full points at the moment. You've only had the one loss, but you've had three washouts.
We did, yeah. It was a tough one too yesterday, Jimmy. I think Super Over losses are the toughest because you think, maybe we did all right here, but we've done all right. The WBBL girls are great. Yeah, having Meg Lanning captain this team has been a real pleasure for me because she's an out-and-out superstar. And it's a great competition at WBBL. I really enjoy it.
Trent, appreciate you making yourself available. The Big Bash, of course, gets underway in early December. Appreciate your time on Sports Day.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Fascinating insight. And it'll be fascinating to see how fans adjust to the new rules, whether or not they are fans. I just get the feeling that Big Bash needs to concentrate on two things: a shorter season, and more importantly, getting more star power into the Big Bash League. More Sports Day still to come on this Friday night, all with thanks to Wilson Homes. Almost done for the week on Sports Day. Of course, it's all with thanks to Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Well, one of the highlights this week for basketball fans was the NBA draft. It was, of course, done virtually this year, given we continue to battle COVID around the world. A couple of big names being recruited that had an Australian link. We saw LaMelo Ball. He was recruited off to the Charlotte Hornets. Even Michael Jordan himself having to tick off on that recruitment. And then Josh Green, who just a couple of years ago was in fact an academy player with Greater Western Sydney. He's been signed by the Dallas Mavericks. Olga Nulick is the basketball expert with ESPN Australia. He had a chat with Jimmy and I earlier in the week. A massive day. Firstly, what did you think of the coverage, the way that it was done by the NBA and the way Adam Silver delivered the picks?
Look, given the circumstances, and especially in that country, it's probably as good as it was going to get. I think the interesting thing is, you know, usually we see at least the main guys in that room, in the green room, at you know, their respective tables, and, you know, we see them and they, you know, kiss their family, and then they go up and shake Adam Silver's hand. It was kind of cool to get a camera into the homes, or at least the place where these guys were filming, you know, their respective selections, and just seeing their family and speaking with their family and hearing their stories properly. I thought that was a really cool element to it. So as far as the way this thing could have gone, I don't think they could have done it better.
Jimmy is the NBA connoisseur around here, so I'm going to give you over to him in a moment. But I do have to just point out two of the highlights from an Australian point of view, that being LaMelo Ball heading to the Hornets with pick three, obviously the team owned by the legendary Michael Jordan, and then Josh Green from Sydney picked up by the Dallas Mavericks. Let's start with LaMelo Ball. Pick three, was that about right after he pretty much missed the back end of last NBL season with the Illawarra Hawks?
That's about where most people had him. You know, going into the draft, you assumed that if those top three teams were picking for fifth, that's you know, what we were getting. So Anthony Edwards was going to go to the Timberwolves because they don't need a point guard, they don't need a big. James Wiseman went next because he's the big guy. The Warriors did need a big. They didn't need a point guard or a wing. And so then, you know, we get to that third pick. The Hornets don't necessarily need a point guard because they do have Terry Rozier and Devontae Graham. But, you know, if you point to those two guys and then you look at the potential of someone like LaMelo, it's pretty clear that you'd rather go all in on someone like LaMelo Ball, you know, a guy who's still really young, really talented. His ceiling is tremendously high. You'd rather go all in on someone like that than you know, stick with Rozier and Graham. But look, after his season with the Hawks, which it was impressive over the 12 games that he did play, you know, that top three pick, if he went number one, it wouldn't have surprised me, right? He's maybe the best talent in this draft. Number three is right about where he should have gone.
And Josh Green at pick 18, was that a surprise or was he always predicted to go top 20?
So in my mind, I had Josh Green going anywhere between 15 and 25. It was a really broad range. And if I was to guess, if I was a betting man before the draft, I would have put him in the early 20s. There are a few teams there, a few contenders there who did like him. Going to the Mavericks, it didn't surprise me, but it was a pleasant thing to see and a pleasant thing to pop up. And honestly, when you look at Green and the way he plays, you know, a really solid 3-and-D guy. I think his shot is underrated. I think he's maybe the best defender in the class. When you look at that fit next to, you know, the team that the Mavericks have, they have Luka Doncic, who's their ball-dominant guy, one of the best players in the world. Kristaps Porzingis is also such a dominant player in the NBA. Putting a complimentary guy like Josh Green, a proper 3-and-D player in that system, I think it's the perfect fit for him.
We mentioned LaMelo Ball, and of course we're always going to have that connection with him because he played out here, Rookie of the Year in the NBL. But his dad, LaVar, he can rub him up the wrong way, to say the least. But he's got two sons now who have been drafted in the top five in the NBA draft. He's laughing, isn't he?
Oh, as in, if you're just worried about someone's pockets, you know, awesome. And even, look, if you speak just personally and just as a dad, you look at what LaVar Ball's done and what his children have achieved, and, you know, you can't be mad at that. It might not be ideal where they ended up. You know, I bet he doesn't want Lonzo in New Orleans, and I don't think that being in Charlotte is the best thing in the world for LaMelo's brand. But if you just, I'm sure if LeVar just steps back and looks at, you know, just in totality, he's got two kids who are top three picks. That's a win if you're a dad, right?
ESPN's Olgun Ulic there for Giant Bicycles. We're still riding with you. You've been listening to Sports Day with thanks to Wilson Homes. Chat with one of their friendly staff today about personalising a home design to suit your individual lifestyle. The week is all done. Thanks for joining us on Sports Day. Big thanks too to Jimmy Bartel for joining us throughout the week. Sam McClure will be back Monday from 6. I'll be alongside him. Look forward to your company then.